to the show on this Martin Luther King Day. If you are anywhere in the U.S., then pay your respects to Martin Luther King. Hopefully he had the day off. And
worldwide.
Worldwide. But, you know, you don't get the day off worldwide. You get the day off in the U.S.
Nah.
You can think about it worldwide. So hopefully you had a nice day, and you continue to have a nice day because you're listening to Ray and Tay today. And I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. And you know what? Sports care, sports heals, and a lot of people owe a lot to MLK. So we just very thankful for this holiday. Thank you for all that he did for all of us. Because we might not be here doing this and talking like how we get to talk. So give us a call. Let's talk everything because it's a heavy football show. But 718-664-9098. If you want, you can send us your emails, early Super Bowl predictions, what you thought about those games at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com, at rayandtaytoday at Twitter. Like us on Facebook. Check out the website. Top 25, all that type of stuff. Ray, we got a special guest on this holiday. Let him know who's joining us. The Super Bowl winning. We need to see his ring. We need to see his jewelry.
He does have jewelry. So we'll get into that in a sec, but we'll tell you what's on the show. So we'll start off with a run around the world of sports. We call it our breaking news segment. We'll talk about the Australian Open really quickly. In the men's and women's draw, we'll talk about the AP Top 25 in college basketball, and then most of the show will be about football. So we'll get into the AFC and NFC championship games that were played last night, what great games we had. Basically, the four best teams in the league went at it. We have our Super Bowl. Speaking of Super Bowls, we have a special guest coming on midway through the show, a Super Bowl champion. A former All-American at the University of Miami, played for the Jets, and then won a Super Bowl with the Oakland Raiders. The Raiders in 1980. Safety on that Raiders Super Bowl winning team. I have seen his ring. I have worn his ring.
Wow.
His name is Burgess Owens. He's a fascinating and fantastic guy. I think you'll really enjoy hearing from him, and he'll come on the show about midway through the show and talk to us about what it's like to have played in the NFL, to have played in a Super Bowl, to have won a Super Bowl, to play in New York and Oakland. So, great guest. And then at the end, if we have time, we'll talk about the NBA. A lot of games today on Martin Luther King Day and lot of happenings. Today for the Knicks, for example, is a 41st game, so it's exactly halfway through the season, even though it's a little before the All-Star break. It's halfway through the season, so this is about the time when you need to start making some adjustments and start your playoff push.
Are you trying to be nice, Ray? Adjustments?
I'm trying.
You mean
I'm trying.
Is it final yet? I mean, we're talking about some breaking news. I guess it is final. Brooklyn
comes
to New York. Yeah,
it's final. 103-80. Brooklyn Nets go into the Garden and beat the Knicks.
Right, and then a new tradition is about the tip-off and NBA TV like they always do where Martin Luther King lost his life. They have the Memphis game and the Pelicans play the Memphis Grizzlies, who are starting to heat up, Ray, because, you know, they're getting healthy. Marc Gasol is back, and the Grizzlies are always a team that we learned last year in the playoffs are a team to watch out for. So let's talk about the Australian Open. Serena lost, Sharapova lost. What's going on out there, man? It's cooled down a little bit. Tell me
It has
me an
cooled
update
down,
now.
And thank goodness for that. Playing in 108-degree temperature is not is not good for anybody. The fans, the ball boys and girls, and definitely not the players. So in the women's draw, we lost Serena and we lost Azarenka. So we've got Sharapova, sorry.
Sharapova.
So we've got,
I think Azarenka's
going
to win it, to be honest.
Yeah, so exactly. So we've got a 1 and a 3 seed going down, and it looks like Azarenka at the bottom of the draw, maybe against a Li Na, you know. So
yeah.
We're in the quarterfinals right now. Radwanska just won. So we've got a situation where two of the top three seeds go down. So it's the exact opposite of the men's bracket, where in the men's bracket you still have – it's still setting up to be Nadal-Murray, so 1-4 in one semi.
Right.
If they both win in the quarterfinals, Nadal-Murray in
right,
one
right.
semi, and then Ferrer-Djokovic in the other semi, so 2-3 in the other semi.
Should be good.
Yeah, it should be.
I like Azarenka, and I probably like Djokovic to win the Australian Open. So
the Joker,
but we'll
know
see.
That.
Yeah, I think I've gone against them in the past, but I got a funny feeling. So look, let's talk about it. Some college hoops. You know, I said in our segment, you're not ready on Friday. The Arizona Wildcats would continue to rock and roll at number one. They got 61 first-place votes at 18-0. Syracuse, we talked about the ACC matchup against Pitt, you know, continuing the Big East. They got 4 votes at 18-0 at number two. Then you got Michigan State, Villanova, Wichita State, who's still undefeated, right, one of the three teams, Florida, San Diego State, playing ball, Fisher, Kansas, who has a chance tonight if they beat Baylor to be the, I think, the first team since 1950 or 60 to win 5 in a row against top 25 teams. That's pretty fascinating. This Kansas team
wow.
is deadly. At 9, Wisconsin, and at 10, Iowa. Ray, and Oklahoma State's right there at 11, who had a good loss, right, I guess, to Kansas on Saturday in the Pac-12. A lot of NBA talent in that game. LeBryant Nash couldn't get the shot off, and they lose to Kansas. What do you think about the top 10, the top 25, and just real quick, what's going on in college hoops?
So it looks like a great tournament. I don't see the elite teams out there. I mean, you could argue Arizona, Syracuse, and Michigan State, 1-2-3. If you want to really look up and down, Arizona's got a ton of talent, but I don't know that they have that transcendent star that, you know, Danny Manning or that Carmelo Anthony that really, you know, takes them to the next level. Maybe they're the best team in the country. I mean, they probably are, but anybody...
So you're saying everybody can be beat this year.
Could win. Oh, yeah.
Do you have that feeling that there's no Louisville?
No, I think when the brackets come out, anybody in the top four can win their bracket. So if you're a 4 seed or better, I think you can win the tournament. That gives you 16 teams. Any of them could win the tournament. I mean, I look at
so that would, that would that would throw it in there. That you're saying
Iowa,
Kentucky, Iowa State still has a chance.
Oklahoma State,
all these teams.
Sure. Sure.
Even Duke gets hot, maybe, and
sure.
Hood and Jefferson play good. Yeah, no, it's fascinating, and I think that's good. That's good for college basketball. And how about the Michigan Wolverines? They are undefeated in Big Ten play. Started off a little rough, but you know they lost Arizona. They're 13-4. They don't have McGarry, and they're playing some ball. So shout out to the Michigan.
They're back, top, you know,
well,
they're 21st in the nation. Well, you know what's great, though, is they play on Wednesday. They play against Iowa. And then later on in the week on
Saturday,
they play Michigan
Saturday,
State.
Yeah.
So you figure if you split against Iowa and Michigan, it's 3-10, right? If you can split against them, you're legit. If you can beat both of them, then you're back to being a top 10 team yourself.
Yeah. Before we get to the AFC and NFC championship games, just real quick, Paul George, they're going to announce tonight the starters in the All-Star game, but Paul George and Kevin Durant, and who had 54 the other night and then followed up with, like, I think 30, were NBA Players of the Week. These guys are going at it, just battling for this MVP trophy. You know, hey, LeBron is always going to be in the top three of the voting anyway and deserves to be. And LaMarcus Aldridge has been balling out with the double-doubles with Portland, who plays on TNT tonight against Houston. But I got to just shout out George and Durant. Amazing 54 points the other night. Durant was amazing. So speaking of amazing, Ray, let's do it, man. We are going to be blessed with a Super Bowl winning player in terms of Burgess Owens joining us. But let's go in reverse order. 23-17, Ray and Tay were wrong. And that's okay, because the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson, Richard Sherman, L.O.B., Legion of Boom, Marshawn Lynch, Skittles, they are going to the Super Bowl in the NFC. Tell me what you thought, man. Fascinating game.
You know, it was a game that was determined ultimately by one play.
Turnover, yeah.
I think that the play – well, I still think San Francisco could have won without – even with turning it over twice like they did. The third one, of course, at the end of the game, you know, was the final nail in the coffin, the Richard Sherman tip pass. But I think ultimately this game turned on that fourth and seven where they decided not to kick the – it was 17-13 in the third quarter, about 2.5 minutes left in the third quarter, 17-13. They decided not to kick the field goal. So the field goal would have made it 17-16, and San Francisco still would have been ahead. But they decided not – because there was a little – they had – some difficulty getting Steven Hauschka on the field at the on time. They called a timeout, decided to go for it on fourth and seven. And then on fourth and seven, with the hard count, Russell Wilson gets him, draws the defensive line offside, and then the Smith brothers took a sort of a half second and didn't really rush the passer full steam. He throws it down the field, really his most aggressive play of the last 4 or 5 weeks, because he's been playing very conservatively. And we'll get to that when we start talking about previewing
and
the Super Bowl.
And we spoke about him in pregame, Jermaine Kearse, on Friday's show, I mentioned him, makes probably, I mean, a Super Bowl winning, touchdown and catch. It was pretty incredible.
So that's the play of the game to me, because they draw, Russell Wilson draws the defensive line offside, has a free play, throws it down the middle. Like, three guys are running the same nine route. They're just running down the middle of the field. And Kearse catches it for the touchdown.
Yeah, they had trips set up, yeah.
And then that's it. And then San Francisco's playing from behind. You know, Kaepernick turns it over twice in the fourth quarter. So at the end, I think ultimately it comes down to that one play. Kudos to Seattle for that play. I think it had a lot to do with the home field advantage. I still believe in my heart San Francisco's a better team. And if
but you
game
didn't you feel
played,
it, though? You felt momentum like it was a giant in that stadium start to creep up into the third, going into, especially into the fourth, and the 12th man sort of took over. You know, that play was amazing.
And you know what? They earned it. You're 13-3. You deserve to have home field advantage. You earned it.
Oh, yeah.
You split with San Francisco 1-1. The one game you lost in San Francisco was close. The game before, when San Francisco came to Seattle, you blew them out. So you you had every right to be confident and to have home field advantage, and good for Seattle.
And we can easily say that the two best teams are in the Super Bowl this year, which is always refreshing.
So,
yeah.
You have a 13-3 one seed against a 13-3 one seed, the number one offense against the number one defense. You can't be say anything but hey. Tip your hat to them. The best.
You know what I gotta talk about, though, that I loved. One thing I'll say about Russell Wilson, and I think Kurt Warner said it on NFL Network, and it's true. You are guaranteed that in every game, you know, you'll see some throws or non-throws, scrambling around, taking sacks, whatever he's, you know, doing, that you're like, oh, Russell, no. But there's going to be anywhere from 3 to 5 plays that he makes that you're just like, oh, my gosh, this kid is amazing. I thought Doug Baldwin stepped up, really, showed himself well, 6 for 106. And I'm so happy. Yeah, but I'm also so happy, and we'll talk about it in the Bronco game. I mentioned to you off air for Champ Bailey, the veteran, 15 years, making it to the Super Bowl. But I'm so happy for Marshawn Lynch to get this stage and to, you know, play in the Super Bowl, because, you know, he might not be a little bit below AP, and he might not be Foster and Charles and McCoy and always catching the passes, but in terms of just pounding it, 22 carries for 109, he and a touchdown, he is, you know, 5.0 yards a carry. He's Skittles, he's beast mode, and he's incredible. And in the playoffs, he's a winner. To me, when I look at him and I see the way he dominates in the playoffs, he's a Hall of Fame running back. I love Marshawn Lynch, and I think
I don't know if
Percy
he's a Hall
Harvin
of Fame running back. I think he's got to maybe win a Super Bowl, but he's a good
okay.
A
but his stats,
running
but
back.
His stats are climbing up every year. He gives you 1,300 to 1,600 yards, and he pounds it. I think Percy Harvin will be able to play in this game, so that's going to be fascinating. And I tell you this, I think Crabtree and Sherman going back and forth, it's a little bit, silly, but I'm not upset with the emotion and, this guy, because I know that he is a great guy on and off the field, and he's the best corner in football. So I hope all this, Aaron Andrews and the interview and everybody's, tuning in and tweeting, checking it out on Twitter last night, I hope at the Super Bowl the Legion of Boom and Shermer and this secondary, they get their just due, and he, can show not just his intelligence, because you know what? He's not the fastest or the highest jumper at corner, but he probably studies as much film and knows the game better than anybody, and you see that on Sunday. So I like Richard Sherman, and I think he's incredible, and I can't wait to see this secondary against the Broncos offense. So
well, I know that he thinks he's incredible. I know that Richard Sherman
but you know what,
incredible.
Well, listen, he showed it on the field, right? And
you know
what? They tested
him. There's a time and a place for that. And so to me, you have 2 weeks. You have media day. You have every day leading up. I just thought that he didn't do himself any favors, and he did himself a disservice by clowning somebody personally on national TV. Like, who cares? You
yeah,
have a
calling
beef with
mediocre,
Michael Crabtree.
Yeah.
That's between you and Michael Crabtree. That
right, and evidently at a charity
your
event,
team.
they had at a charity event in Arizona. I think supposedly Crabtree was sort of didn't shake his hand and sort of was like, oh, we're gonna kill you next time we play you and that type of stuff. So look, you're right. I don't think they needed to continue it on. Dion was like, you guys are bigger than this and better than this, so just stop it. It's not good for the kids to see. And I agree with that. But let's talk about this secondary in terms of on the field. Ray, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, these guys are amazing. They hit. They tackle. they're amazing.
And remember, they're doing all this without Browner, their other
Pro Bowler
on the other side.
Yeah. No,
so this team is great, but you know what? They're going to need all of that, and they're going to need all of that to contend with the four wideouts that the Denver Broncos put on the between the tight ends and the wide receivers, even the backs out of the backfield. This is going to be a great matchup. But you know what? Soak it all up.
No. But let me ask you this before we get to the Bronco game. Two things. Number one, Ray and Tay send our prayers to Navarro Bowman, who's just one of the best linebackers in the game, and we just hope that he is okay. I didn't get the official word on that. Probably ACL is what they said, and we just hope surgery and rehab, all that goes well. But you kind of mentioned it on Friday, and, I got to say, yo, Terps, my man did not – he only got a couple attempts, maybe three or four passes thrown at him, but Vernon Davis, Ray, 2 for 16, that was not big time.
You know what's the worst part about it? And we talked a little bit to George Reister about this, is football is a macho man's sport. I hate to say it, right? You got to be big and strong and tough.
He got.
And maybe you can get away with it as being a kicker or something like that, or maybe a quarterback. You still got to be tough as a quarterback. I shouldn't poo-poo quarterbacks. But
and then even Crabtree. Remember, he stopped short on that pass, too, because he saw he was about to get popped.
If word gets out that you're soft, then people are going to go after you, and people are going to hit you at the line of scrimmage, and people are going to take extra shots at you, and they're going to try to intimidate you. And it just boggles the mind that a guy that's got all the physical skills and is just a mismatch, the minute he steps on the field is a mismatch, because he's either bigger than you or he's faster
than you.
Bigger,
better, stronger.
But Vernon Davis is the real deal in terms of physical talent, but word is getting out that he's a little bit soft. So
I don't believe
he's a heck of a player. Though he's a heck of a player. He'll bounce back next year, and he'll have a great year, another Pro Bowl year for him, and he'll be fine. I think if they advance to a Super Bowl at some point and maybe even win one, he'll be fine. But 2 for 16, that's not showing up strong in the NFC Championship.
It really isn't. Then let's go to the AFC. 26-16, you could say what you want about the Denver Broncos and Manning, but you know what? It's time to give their defense some love with all the injuries and everything. No Von Miller, Dumervil, whatever. These guys, Champ Bailey stepped up. You know, no Chris Harris. Ayers, Phillips stepped up. Their defense played really well, and I think
Meatloaf. What about your boy? Oh, Pot. What do they call him? Pot Rose.
Yeah. Nah, I Omaha, the whole nine. I tell you this. One thing I liked about this game, it's unfortunate, but once Talib got hurt, really the Patriots had really no shot. I mean, they didn't really have, I don't want to say a shot before, but the momentum and getting down, 13-3, I think it was just too much. And Demaryius went off once Talib was gone. I mean, 7 for 134 and a touchdown. Peyton Manning, the third man in history in a championship game to throw for 400 yards. Daryl LaMonica and our man Dan Marino. 402 touchdowns. We all love Peyton. How could you not? He's like Gruden calls him the sheriff. You got to be happy. And I think this is going to be a fascinating matchup, too, just with the quarterbacks, because you've got the stoic, tall, loved in the SEC, Tennessee, Volunteer College, great family quarterback, and Peyton Manning, the pocket passer, against the 5'10 and a half, 5'11. Shout out to all of us guys under 6 feet. Woo-woo! Russell Wilson represents and is a scrambling, but also still, pretty much a pocket passer. He does run around, but, he does – it's not – like, he's not like Kaepernick just in terms of constantly running or Vic, but still a little bit of two different styles. And I think it's interesting just in that quarterback battle and matchup. So I'm excited about that. No, Sean Moreno was a little banged up in the game. I haven't, heard anything about that. Only 59 yards rushing. And you get the 43 from Monty Ball. His assets were in order. No fumble. What did you feel about this game? And let me ask you, what did you think about Belichick this morning? His little – I feel the Patriots sort of cry always. Last year they didn't shake hands. This year now he's talking about, the player made a dirty hit, and his team does the same thing all the time with Welker and Talib. Give me a feel on the Patriots and also what Belichick said.
So I think the Belichick is a non-issue. I think that everybody runs pick plays in the NFL. This is how they do it these days. The Patriots are the first team to run a pick play and the last team to run a pick play. So they run picks all the time. So I think what happened was Talib and Wes Welker ran into each other. Maybe Wes Welker dipped his shoulder a little bit, but he definitely didn't go for anybody's knees, and it's a normal part of the game. If you want to call him for a penalty, you can call him for a penalty for an illegal pick. Nobody was trying to hurt anybody, and to insinuate otherwise is ridiculous. So I think that Bill Belichick is wrong, and I think he's just trying to get some I don't know if it's retribution.
Sympathy,
to Wes Welker,
I don't know what it is. I don't
or
know
sympathy
what it
for
is.
His team. I don't know.
Don't anyway, say stuff like that. It was weird. I thought it was weird.
Put that aside. Patriots were losing this game. If this game were to be played 100 times, they'd lose it 100 times. They just didn't have enough firepower. And to me, the key to the game was the big nasties up front. So Peyton Manning barely got touched, and he got rushed once. I think he got pressured once. He didn't get sacked. He didn't get knocked down. So they couldn't put
no
a hat
pass
on
rush.
Him. So the
no Chandler Jones, no
Mankiewicz,
none of them.
I'm sorry, the offensive line for Denver was great.
Yeah.
And I thought the defense, like you said, was underrated. I thought that Danny Trevathan and the boys and my man Knighton, the big fella, was all there. And Carter and Adams, Bailey, Rogers Cromartie turns out to, he's picking up the slack in the secondary. So if this Denver secondary continues to play like this and that offense and the final note that I have about this game is kudos to Manning and that offense and the whole Denver organization for saying, you know what, we set records, but we'll beat you any way you want. They had their two longest drives of the season, a 7.5-minute drive, both of them in the second half of this game. So even though Denver historically has been a high-tempo offense, they realized that to win the game, to take the air out of the ball, and to only give Tom Brady 8 possessions, that's 8 possessions all game. Remember a couple weeks ago we talked about how they didn't take the air out of how Kansas City didn't take the air out of the ball against the Colts? They gave the Colts 12 possessions, Well, guess what? You give the Hall of Famer, arguably a top 1, 2, 3, 4 quarterback in NFL history, you only give him 8 possessions on the road, you're doing your job. So even though the Broncos were all about scoring and they set the record for points and just were the most prolific offense in NFL history, on this day, they put a 7 and a 7.5 minute drive together, took the air out of the ball, and won. So they'll win any way you want them to win. And I thought
give some credit,
well
too, to John Fox. This is his second Super Bowl, and with his second franchise and team, took the Panthers and lost to the Patriots. Well, this time he beats the Patriots and goes with the Broncos. So I think he's sort of not mentioned as a good head coach, and I think he is. So, you know, we got to give kudos to him, and it looks like their OC guest, you know, might be interviewed and has a shot at potentially getting the job for the Cleveland Browns. So, you know, this is what it should be. I mean, I know we both sort of, picking the Niners, both sort of feel all around they're a better team in terms of having more weapons. But if Percy Harvin can play, which I think he'll be able to, having 3 weeks of rest, I got to believe that, you know, the Seahawks have a legit – and this is fascinating. We spoke about this off air. It opens up. The Seahawks are like a 2-point favorite. Then late at night, I go to bed at, you know, Eastern time. It's almost like 2 in the morning. The spread is like a pick 'em. And then it swings, I guess, to this morning where the Broncos are, you know, 1, 1.5-point favorite. So I think either way, like you said, this is, you know, it's a coin toss. You know, you're picking the winner either way. The over-under, I think, was at 48. It might be at 47.5 now. I'm not sure. But Vegas will have fun with this. It's at MetLife Stadium. The commissioner is going to sit outside in the cold weather stadium this next week or two with advertising and commercials. And, you know, Fox Sports 1 is going to be there live every day. You know, the game's on Fox. Troy and Buck, Troy Aikman and Joe Buck do a great job. This is going to be this is what we've been waiting for. You know, you want to see Manning in his third Super Bowl, you know, be tested, and if he wins, it'll be amazing. But, you know, he's trying to win in Eli Stadium, right? Because when Eli won against the Patriots in Indianapolis, he won in his brother's stadium the second time around. So the storylines are great. We'll have our, you know, talk about it next couple of shows, and obviously our preview January 31st. We'll have an ex-NFL player joining us for that as well, George Reister. So Ray and Tay will give you tons of Super Bowl coverage, and
Don't worry. If you want to hear some football talk, tune in to Ray and Tay today. We'll give it to you. We'll definitely have some football talk. You know what else I thought was interesting is it's the fourth time the number one rated offense is playing the number one rated defense. And three out of the four times – it's the fifth time. So it's happened four times before, and three out of the four times the defensive team has won. So we'll see what happens in 2 weeks. So what a great matchup. I love it. Look, number one team from the AFC, number one team from the NFC, best offense, best defense – let's get it on. 2 weeks. Looks like we have our special guest. Hey, Burgess.
Hey, how are you?
Thanks for joining the show. This is Tom from Ray and Tay today. So I'm Ray.
Hey, Burgess. This is Tay, Eric Taylor. Thank you for joining us. We're very excited to have you, and we've definitely watched your career when we were young, growing up, man. A lot of respect.
Well, thanks so much. I'm listening in. It sounds like you guys have a good feel of what's going on out there in this market. So I'm looking forward to get some of your feedback also.
Oh, great. Well, hey, so let's just jump right in. You know, what an exciting weekend we had with, you know, the AFC and the NFC championships last night. So let me ask you, what do you take from those games? How much do you follow the game these days? And to let everybody know, Burgess was an NFL player. His career went from 1973 1982, so and a Super Bowl champion, no less, for the 1980 Oakland Raiders. How much you follow the game today, and what did you think of the games last night?
Well, I happened to follow the games this weekend, and it was very exciting, particularly the very last one. But on the most part, I'm kind of a passive watcher. My my wife and my older girls are a little bit more fans than I am nowadays, but I do enjoy the sport. And I guess because we have one of the old-timers, Peyton Manning, back in the highlight again, I'm kind of interested to see how he does. I'm really impressed with seeing one of the best of that position ever, and it's going to be a fun watching it play again in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's great. So, Bert, let me ask you something. What do you remember about that January in 1980? You guys went out and beat San Diego. In San Diego, I think it was 34-17 in the AFC Championship, and then I think you had a week leading up to the Super Bowl there. So tell the audience what your thoughts were as a player. You just won the AFC Championship, and you're getting ready for the Super Bowl.
Well, I want to add one other fact in there, and that is that we were the first wild card team. So
yep.
for the three games up to that Super Bowl game, we were the underdogs, which was a lot of fun. I will say this, because the timing happened to be right for us. We were a team that kind of caught the momentum toward the middle of the season. We had a quarterback, Jim Plunkett, who began to play tremendously well. And the defense had so much confidence in offense and vice versa. And so I would say that the biggest part of this going into the Super Bowl is momentum. And I'll be honest with you, based on what I can see, based on the feeling that they belong there and that they're destined to be there, I would say at this point my thoughts are that the Broncos have somewhat of a lead in that area. They have such confidence in their quarterback, Peyton Manning, and they have a right to be. All they have to do now is have the defense step up, and they can have a very, very good day. But I would say I'm excited for both teams. There's nothing more fun than to be playing in the very last game of the season, and millions of eyes watching and fans being excited about it, and I just think it's going to be a great, great event for both teams.
So, Burgess, let me ask you this. You know, you went through that experience. Obviously, the media day nowadays is just insane and ridiculous with the social media and, you know, the technological advances. But as a secondary player, what advice would you give, you know, to the Broncos, the veterans like a Champ Bailey, who's, you know, making his first Super Bowl in 15 years, or even the young guys like Richard Sherman and, you know, his whole comments last night, the Legion of Boom, and just players in general, what advice do you give them in preparing for that moment and that surge of energy of the Super Bowl?
Very, very good question. I would say the biggest factor is remember what got you there. I'll say this again. I didn't follow both teams extremely well throughout the year. Based on what I saw this weekend, the biggest factor will be how humble they come into the game, realizing this is a moment that will not come for many people again, and to be so focused on making sure they are a team player and that it doesn't matter who gets the credit. And I'll say this because of the player you just mentioned, defensive back, who's been around 15 years. I have a feeling that if you have enough players like that who understand how special this moment is and they will probably never get this chance again, they're going to be very, very serious about it. I hope not distracted. In other words, this is you're totally correct. This is a week in which there's so much media attention. The team that stays focused and does not get distracted will be the team that goes in best prepared for this game. Again, I'm just giving a basic layman's view of this whole process. And I would say this, based on what I saw, there's a team that's very humble at this point. That's the Denver Broncos. And there's a team that is a little bit older that might have a chance because of that, those factors, might have a chance of being ahead of the game.
Right. Now, I've got to ask you this. We're New York guys. We love the Jets. You played for the Jets. You probably had maybe one of your best seasons in 79 with six INTs with the Jets. Then you go over to the Raiders and win the Super Bowl. But what was it like playing for the legendary owner and sort of, you know, savant and genius of the game, Al Davis?
Well, and that's something that unfortunately a lot of the younger people have not had a chance to experience, an era where Al Davis was such a maverick, not only in the way he brought players in, players who were either has-beens on other teams or troublemakers on other teams. At the end of the day, he had a theory which was so unique and so different and so refreshing to players like ourselves, and that was summed up in the phrase, just win, baby. He could care less about all the other stuff. He wanted his Raiders to be in the Super Bowl every single year if he had a choice. And in those days, what people remember the Raiders as a winning organization. They were the team that won every single year, every single Monday Night Football game. And a player like myself, who have been with the Jets for 7 years, the best we had come was a 50-50 season. Every year was frustrating for me, and I come from the University of Miami before that for 4 years, and every year was a losing season. So believe me, by the time I got to the Raiders, I was so impressed just to be sitting in the locker room and look around and see guys like Al, see owners like Al Davis, but more important to see players like Jim Plunkett and Ted Hendricks. And you go through the list of guys. I felt it a very big honor to sit there in silver and black and know that we were one game away from winning the Super Bowl. So, again, it was a very special time. Things have changed tremendously since then, particularly with, you know, the transient nature of the business. And I think it's unfortunate for so many teams not to be able to predict what the team will do every year just because the players will be there every year, year out. But it was fun, to say the least.
And you know what? And, Bert, you left right before the Raiders won another one. I mean, your last season obviously was 82, but then in 83 you guys won another one. So the Raiders
in
from the mid-70s on, from the mid-70s on was the organization, you know, until the mid-80s was the organization. Let me ask you about one of your teammates. I know this guy was special, and I want to pay homage to him. And I know he was a personal, a friend of yours and a great player. So we grew up knowing him as an All-Pro tight end, a 5-time Pro Bowler, and a 2-time Super Bowl champion. But tell us a little bit about your teammate Todd Christensen, what he meant to you, and what made him special.
Thanks, Todd, for the opportunity to do that. And you're absolutely right. He was a very, very special guy. And I'll tell you what I've grown to respect and appreciate throughout all the years, and that is the concept of the underdog. Whether it be a team, whether it be an individual, someone who is not expected to win but wins anyway. Someone who finds out that there's more to him than even he thought he might have or she thought she might have. And that is the underdog that was represented by the Raider organization the year we went to Super Bowl. And that is personified within the character of Todd Christensen. I played with Todd when I first got to the Raiders. He was a special team captain. He was just happy to be on the team. He was a third-team backup tight end. But as you saw, for those who remember from 83 on, he was a guy who was competitive. I saw a comment by Howie Long about Todd about a year or so ago. And he said, basically, you have guys who show up, they have a lot of talent, it's obvious, and they do their very best with it. You have guys who don't have the same amount of talent, but they do more with it. And that was Todd Christensen. So he was, again, a personal friend, somebody I respected tremendously. And I learned a lot just in watching him perform and compete and just a good character guy. And he just represented, I think, the best of that era that we came out of, guys that still you see today. You know, see some guys that from my era that still are very visible in the media today, and it says a lot about the kind of guys that came through that era.
Yeah, we loved Todd Christensen and just, you know, all that he stood for, and thought he was just, you know, probably an underrated player. I think he was, you know, really key to what the Raiders did for a bunch of seasons. But Burgess, I want to ask you this. This is sort of fascinating to me, you know, playing out there, you know, not necessarily on an island as a corner, but 6'2", 200 pounds as a safety, playing, you know, strong and free safety. When you defended against whether it be receivers or tight ends, and even when I think about, you know, the great quarterbacks in your time, give me one or two players at the quarterback position and at the receiver that you sort of, you know, had to prepare a little extra for or that you dreaded playing against.
Okay, that's a very good question. And I would say, you know, I played for 10 years, 7 years with the Jets, and we had a lot of changes, coaches, players. So to say the least, when I got to the Raiders, even though it was only for 3 years, there was a sense of stability. We had Al Davis, who was consistent every single year. And as an owner, you saw him, you knew predictably when you were going to see him, he's going to be on every single flight, as opposed to the owner of the Jets we saw once a year. So I would say when I came out of most with the Raiders was a respect for a team like the Chargers. That was Dan Fouts and his group of core receivers.
Air
Coryell,
yeah.
Exactly. So I would say this. In terms of answering the question from a free safety position, because that's basically where I played 7 years as a free safety.
Right.
I was not on the island like a Lester Hayes or Dwayne Osteen I played with. But one thing that was very, very sure when I got to the Raiders my first and last year is that we were very unselfish players. So we actually, as a team, the goal was to win, and it didn't matter who got the credit for it. We loved it when Lester Hayes, Lester Molester, or Stickum, we did
his thing
because
right.
we all benefited.
You love the Stickum,
we all
yeah. benefited
from, all you all did was put a finger up, and it was stick. And it got to the point where it was. If you ever take a look back on pictures of Lester Hayes, you see Stickum everywhere. He's a grass, and we call him Pig Pen because he could care less how he looked. He just wanted to catch a football. He put a finger on that ball, he's going to catch it. So I would say that to answer your question, the team that probably we had to make sure we were up for was Eric Carroll. That was the San Diego Chargers. We played going into the Super Bowl year. And it was a team basically that we knew we had to be more physical then because they were very much of a finesse team. We had to hit them hard. We had to be very, very aggressive. And when we had an opportunity to catch a ball, to get an interception as a defense, we had to take advantage of it. So to that question, as a free safety, I would say the team that we had to really be ready for was that San Diego team. And I was fortunate to have some great corners that did their job, a fantastic strong safety, Mike Davis, who was very tough. You know, he came up with a big ball against the Cleveland Browns. Mm. It was 35 degrees below weather. He could not catch a ball given to him before this game or after, but that one particular play, 35 below and 20 seconds or 30 seconds left, he caught an interception, which took us into two balls. So we just depended on each other and came those tough times.
That's amazing. Yeah, I got to ask you real quick. I'm a diehard Steelers fan. So how tough was Bradshaw, Lynn Swann, and John Stallworth?
You know, it's interesting that you bring that team up because I had both sides of the story with that. I had a chance to play against the Steel Curtain with the Jet, and of course, every single time we played, they beat us pretty handily. And then I had a chance to play against them as a Raider, and it was a totally different experience. We played the Monday night football going into the Super Bowl year, and the thing that the Raiders had going during those years, and those of older than I remember, they were known for being an intimidating force, particularly the defensive backfield.
Just
took
no
quarters. What they did is they had receivers really thinking about them, good or bad. They thought about them, and therefore they made an impact. So I had a lot of respect for those guys in that era. Again, I experienced how it was to lose to them every single year when I was a Jet. On the other side, as a Raider, we had a chance to see how it was to kind of be one of those teams that just came up with the right plays at the right time and came into winning against them. So, again, a lot of respect for them, to say the least.
Hey, Burgess, let me ask you something. You wear multiple hats now, right? You were an All-American in college, and then you played in the NFL, and you're actually a member of the retired players, NFL retired players. And on a serious note, obviously we're all fans of the game, and we love it, and we love the competition and leading up to the Super Bowl, but this game is a physical game, and it takes its toll on people. And what is your opinion? This is also obviously in the news just this week. What's your opinion on the retired players' lawsuit against the NFL, $765 million settlement, and then the district judge, Anita Brody's rejection of the settlement. So what's your opinion on the settlement? Where do you think this is going to end up?
Very, very good question. First of all, let me just say that I am extremely fortunate and blessed. As I've become more aware of this last year has kind of unfolded, players that came from my era, Earl Campbell and so many other players that I remember running down the field, taking numbers, jerseys falling off of because they're just running through people, that today have a whole different disposition physically. It was a game that was quite different during my era. Nowadays, players know. They understand the impact of a concussion. And nowadays, it was just a matter of you take those smelling salts, you get back on the field, and you continue to play. Well, that's beginning to show up now. So I do believe there's a window of players that need to be compensated because it was a game that was played very, very tough, very physical, and you do anything you could to stay in the game, not knowing, no one knew what the consequences would be 10, 15, 30 years later, and there are consequences to the physical game that it is. I in terms of the settlement, I've heard both sides of the story. I've become more concerned about just how much compensation is coming out of it for the player themselves. I haven't had a chance to do as much studying it as some guys who might be closer to it. But, again, I've heard both sides of the story. And at the end of the day, there are different areas. There's financial compensation, and there's also health compensations that need to be looked at. And I just think there should be a focus on making sure that era guys are truly helped through this period of time. Because the game went by fast, the income went by fast, and they're all now trying to compete in an arena that many cannot compete anymore because of the commitment they made to the they had at the time.
Yeah,
and tragically, we've lost a lot of lives.
More awareness. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's very sad. A lot of players have taken their lives, you know, dealing with the everyday pains of headaches, concussions. We've heard the descriptions. You know, my Steelers, you know, Mike Webster took his life. Junior Seau,
yeah.
You know, it's Dave Dorson. So, you know, I hope it works out for the benefit of everyone. My initial thought was 765, and, you know, I think only 600 and change of that was going to the retired players. I don't know, like Anita Brody said, if that is financially enough, you know, and I also know that the litigation could have gone on for, you know, 3 to 5 years, and, you know, they were hoping to get $2 to $3 billion. So, you know, where's that middle? Because guys need help now, and families need help now, and, you know, you don't want it to be in the court. So maybe they boost it up to $1 billion, and everybody walks away a little bit happier. But, that's really hard.
I think you have a good perspective there. At the bottom line, and again, we're not talking about the players today, that we understand what happens. We understand that there is a risk. Therefore, you take the helmet, you guys don't go back on the field. This is a different day. And I totally agree. I think at some point there's a middle ground where players can be helped that need help now. And those who will need help as the years continue to roll on, the next 5, 10, 20, 50, 10 years or whatever. So somewhere there is a middle ground, and I hope that that does happen. Again, I was very fortunate that I did not have some of the issues that some players do. And I will say this, guys I've played with, today I talk with, say, if I had to do it all over again, I would not play professional football. That speaks a lot to the game itself.
Wow.
I look at it, it was a great opportunity. I'm so glad I played, but at the same time, I came out healthy. Guys didn't. So
Burgess, tell us, what are you doing now?
Okay. Well, I got out of the game and got into the corporate sales, and it's something I did not think I'd ever do when I was a high school kid in college. I was so shy and introverted, but I gained some confidence from playing football, so I got into corporate sales for quite a few years. And now I'm CEO of a company called MediCard, which is actually introducing into the United States a personal health record card that allows individuals like ourselves to keep up with all our records and be able to transfer from one doctor to one hospital is interoperability. So the things like that I'm very, very excited about, and I'm working with a company out of Israel to introduce it. And it's something that, again, at my age, I'm excited about doing and very competitive for the industry that I'm part of. And so it keeps my juices flowing, which is a great thing at this point.
That's great, Burgess. Hey, look, we really appreciated you coming on the show. You're a friend of mine and a friend of the show, and I tell people, I wore your ring. I felt like that was my Super Bowl. I wore a Super Bowl ring, 1980.
It makes me
Super
jealous.
Bowl
he tells me.
Ring.
He tells me about it all the time, Burgess.
Yeah, well, Tyler Ray, I tell you, first of all, I appreciate what you guys are doing. I love the fact when entrepreneurs get out and make their dreams come true and take a risk. And you guys obviously enjoy what you're doing, which is great. And I heard a little bit of the show coming in, and you're really good at what you do. So keep it going, buddy. And I look forward to being a more constant fan of hearing what you guys are up to every season.
All right. Thank you so much, and good luck in your business
thank
ventures.
You.
And,
yes,
and,
thank you so much,
I know your family
Burgess.
Moved. So good luck with that, too, Burgess. We appreciate your time.
See you soon. Okay, guys. Take care.
Take care,
Burgess. Oh, that's great. Super Bowl winning free safety from the 1980 Oakland Raiders, Burgess Owens on Ray and Tay Today. True gentleman, tons of class, and pretty darn good safety, too. You know, when you get six interceptions, 79 for the Jets, and I think at two or three, and 80 for the Super Bowl team, and has some big hits and big plays, what more can you say, Ray?
Yeah, what a nice guy in person. And like I said, I wore his Super Bowl ring. I felt like I was a champion. It had, I think it was Super Bowl 17, so it had 17 diamonds on it and had the Raiders logo and his name engraved on the inside. I thought I was the, you know, that was back before the Instagram days, because otherwise I'd be Instagramming it and sending
it
to people.
You would tweet it out, man, let everybody know.
for sure. So look,
awesome.
We actually have an email from one of our listeners who listens all the time, a supporter of the show, Stacy, and he wanted us to address the Richard Sherman situation. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the show, but he wanted to say that Richard Sherman is trending on social media, and there's some vilification of this young man, and he wanted to get it out there that you know, it feels like it's crossed the line, right? It's one thing to talk about his performance and on the field, that's obviously fair game, and then maybe he was a little emotional, you know, and wanted to
but
tell the world that he
didn't say anything that bad. Stacey's
no,
right.
No,
he didn't
totally
say anything
Look,
so bad. Yeah.
And that's where I think we both agree with Stacey and said, look, the worst thing you can say about this kid is that it was a little bit out of character for somebody who should be, you know, getting ready for the Super Bowl, and just, you know, maybe as a first team All Pro, you should hold yourself, you know, to a higher standard in terms of, you know, you don't need to go into personal, you know, you have a personal beef with Michael Crabtree, that's fine, take care of that personally. This is about the Seattle Seahawks, about the team. That's about as worst, you know, the worst criticism that you can get.
Right.
To put on Richard Sherman. Anything beyond that, and there are some racial undertones apparently that's happening now on Twitter and Facebook and all this. And
silly.
That's totally out of line. I mean, this kid's 25 years old. He seems like a really nice kid. He seems like he's a
Went
smart kid.
Went to Stanford, very intelligent.
And maybe he was a little bit overzealous, and maybe he shouldn't have slapped, you know, Michael Crabtree. All right, it's not the worst thing in the world. He basically didn't,
But all he did
moment.
Was basically in the interview, he got very expressive and he said that this guy, I shut him up and he is a mediocre wide receiver. He didn't curse. He didn't call him out his name. He called him mediocre. The Twitter world and everyone else needs to chill out. It's Martin Luther King Day. And you know what? Freedom of speech in America. The guy didn't do anything wrong. He didn't hurt Erin Andrews. She's not any type of victim. It was just an awkward interview, and we need to just chill out, ladies and gentlemen. It's sports. Sports heals, sports cares, and sports is fun. And just be thankful that we can all enjoy these games and these great athletes and stuff like that and chill out. So thank you, Stacy, for the email, and he's right. You know, this guy's not a villain. I mean, come on. He's a cornerback for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, we take things a little too seriously. Every word is micro-analyzed. And at the end of the day, it was an excited player who made a great play, just running his mouth a little bit. And so, you know, like the former NFL players sort of would say, hey, act like you've been there before. So why?
Yeah.
He got a little excited.
Yeah, that's what Primetime said. Dion was like, yo, let's just slow your roll, play it, chill out. But you know what's so funny? I think people are so quick to judge athletes and entertainers and all this stuff. But they don't know what they would do in that situation. And, you know, you don't, you know, people, like, whether it's Justin Bieber or these, you know, actors or whatever, if you had, you know, cameras following you around, Johnny Manziel, when you were 20, 21 years old and you were cussing and drinking beer or whatever, you know, I mean, please, everybody, you know, they're throwing, rocks at a, you know, glass house, you know, just stop it. People need to stop. And I can honestly say this kid, he backs up. He backs up his talk. So I got to tell you, listen.
I just hope the talk comes back to football, right?
Nobody got
hurt.
And how great
injured.
The defense
just...
is. Exactly. You know, to me, it's a non-story in that sense, but it is a story if people are going to start, you know, coming after this guy, you know, and what is it, because he's got long dreadlocks? I mean, please, you know, give me a break. I get tired of it, and, you know, and on this day of Martin Luther King, we need to really, you know, because I think, yeah, I could see where some of it could be racial or getting racial, and it's just stop it. People just need to stop it.
That's unnecessary. It's out of line, and it's totally ridiculous. So let's move on to the National Basketball Association. We had a great, long, NFL-heavy show. Let's finish it in the last 5 minutes. Let's finish it with some hoop talk. So we had MLK Day today. The Knicks, as usual, host that game. Ray and Tay have been to many of these MLK
days
at Madison Square Garden. Well, I'm glad we weren't there today. Brooklyn comes in and beats the Knicks 103-80.
That's hard. You know, I think it's hard, and we mentioned also, you know, I think already tipping off in Memphis, the Clippers, would they beat Dallas today?
Yeah,
they're in the second
quarter already.
Yeah, so, you know, look, it's a great tradition, just like Christmas Day for the NBA, you know, basketball. I'm concerned about the Knicks because, to me, it's also the effort. And at home, in front of your crowd, and these people, because I know because it came out of my pocket as well, these people pay good money. And the Knicks, you know, Pablo comes back. But the effort sometimes, I think, that you get out of the Knicks and that they've been giving, it's really, really disappointing. And I don't know. This season, I don't know if it's time for a trade. I don't know, you know, what's going to happen. Obviously, you know, a little trade news over the weekend, you know, multi-layered, right? But the Nets basically send Sangala to the Bulls and get Marquise Teague, whose brother Jeff Teague plays for the Hawks. And then, in turn, they go ahead and send Tyshawn Taylor, the Kansas point guard, who hasn't done much. I think Teague's done a little bit, you know, from Kentucky, a little bit more in the NBA than him. They send Taylor to the Pelicans, who, you know, gosh, you feel bad for them with their injuries of Drew Holiday and some of their players, and they get a draft pick back. So, you know, Brooklyn looks like they're turning it around without Lopez. Darren Williams came back today. Joe Johnson's been playing like a stud, an all-star. And tonight they announced the all-star. So, you know, let's talk about that a little bit. What do you think about, obviously, on the 30th they'll announce the reserves. But the fan vote, you know, you'll probably have in the East George, Melo, and LeBron, and then Dwayne Wade and Kyrie in the backcourt. In the West, you're going to have Howard, Durant, and Griffin. So they're very big. And then the backcourt, looks like voting-wise, it'll be, you know, Kevin Love is right behind Griffin. But then in the backcourt, it'll be Kobe and
Steph Curry,
and,
right?
And Steph Curry. So
who's going to take over from Kobe?
Yeah, it will be James Harden. Jeremy Lin is high in the voting. I don't want to see him, you know, get it by default of voting. You hope that for the first time, guys, I can't wait to see a LaMarcus Aldridge or Lillard or different guys like that.
For sure. You know, I have to say something about the All-Star. We hold these All-Stars as pretty, you know, in high esteem. And if you make an All-Star game, then we think that that's a pretty great achievement. And I want the fans to be involved, and I want the fans to participate. But there's got to be some checks and balances here because, you know, maybe I'm taking it a little too seriously. It's just All-Star, and if the fans want this person, the fans want this person. But you know what? It puts a bad taste in my mouth when, looking down the list in the East, the backcourt, Derrick Rose is third.
Yeah.
Ray Allen is fifth. Rajon Rondo is sixth. I mean, really? And Lance Stephenson is ninth? DeMar DeRozan
and Lance
is
will
10?
Make it. You know, and thankfully, they only vote for the starters, right? Because the coaches will fix and correct most of the wrongs, you know? But
Kobe
doesn't deserve to be an all-star.
In the West. Yeah. Jeremy Lin is fourth in the West. James Harden is fifth in the West. Tony
Who's
Parker
been the best
is seventh.
Guard this year, yeah.
Dame Lillard is eighth.
No,
really?
It makes you crazy, Ray. It makes you crazy. So, but you know what? It'll be fun for some of these guys who have not made All-Stars yet and guys who haven't been to enough, you know, like a Steph Curry, a LaMarcus Aldridge. It'll be interesting to see without, you know, all these injuries, without a CP3, you know, will, you know, Damian Lillard, you know, make it? Will the Pacers have four guys? You know, the Heat will probably get Bosch. and their two guys voted in, LeBron and Wade, but will the Pacers get Hibbert, West, George, and, you know, and their David
Stevenson.
West, Hibbert, George,
Stevenson.
And Stevenson, yes. And Stevenson deserves
they
it.
They should bring the whole team. Bring the whole team. They're the best team in the league. Bring the whole team. Why not?
Oh, they're amazing.
I mean,
yeah,
the Celtics that year had four, right? They had Rondo and the big three. So why not? The Pacers deserve it. Just because they're not sexy, just because they're not known nationwide to all the fans, Lance Stephenson deserves to be an all-star. Roy Hibbert deserves to be an all-star.
Shout out to Brooklyn. Stevenson's going to represent. I think he'll, you know, the coaches will put him in. Kevin Love will probably get in. Durant, like I said earlier, Durant and George were players of the week. And gosh, Ray, I'm sticking to my pick, man. Durant is going to be the MVP. He is last seven games, 30 and above.
Amazing. I think here's the thing. It's like a kid in the candy store. When you tell a natural born scorer that his next option is gone for the foreseeable future, and you tell him not only is he gone, not only are you the best scorer in the league, three-time defending scoring champion, we need more from you on offense. You've unleashed a monster. And Kevin Durant has officially become a monster. He put 54.
Well, not three-time because he didn't win it last year. He didn't win it last year. Three out of the last four.
Okay, so he won three in a row.
Got to give Melo as well.
Got to give Melo. But he was a three-time scoring champ. He won the three before. And this guy is just unbelievable. So, you know, he might win MVP, but I tell you what, George and LaMarcus Aldridge are right there
with
him.
We'll have something to say about it.
Yeah, and obviously LeBron could be MVP every year. So those four I think this won't be decided until March and even into April, depending on whose team finishes conference.
It will be a tight vote. I definitely agree with you because there will be some people that are just tired of voting for LeBron, and then maybe it will come down to is Portland, you know, the number one seed still? Is, you know, Paul George done so much that you got to give it to him over Durant? How much does OKC drop down? You got to believe if OKC is still a 1, 2, or 3 seed that you know, that he would get it. And then how about Big Timmy, 18-10? Listen, you know what? You can hate on the Spurs all you want, ladies and gentlemen, but Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and Big Timmy, big fundamentals, the best power forward ever. Even though Ray says he's upset because he's played a lot of games at center, he's the best power forward ever. Barkley even says it. Tim Duncan at 30, what is he, 36, 16 years in or whatever, he's averaging 18-10 a game. You got to love it. So, listen, man, great show. Thanks to Burgess Owens, the Super Bowl champion, who it was great. And I wanted to ask him, man, about Cliff Branch. Yo, hey, people don't know. Watch NFL Network. Watch NFL Network the next 2 weeks, and they will go over the first 47 Super Bowls. And you know, I remember that night. I was in my parents' bedroom watching the game, and I actually was rooting for the Eagles, even though I'm an AFC guy. And I loved Jaworski at the time and Carmichael, but the Raiders, they were just too much. Cliff Branch, Kenny King, Van Egan, Jim Plunkett. Another Stanford guy, a Patriot. So that was great, and, you know, he was a part of it, man. Great, you know, very, very solid player. So great show, man, and we'll be back on Friday
to get you ready for your sports weekend. There's no NFL football this weekend. I mean, there's the
Pro
Bowl.
No, but we do have the Pro Bowl.
That.
And Deion and Jerry Rice will on Wednesday night pick their teams. Real fantasy football. It's actually going
to
be kind of fun. It'll be more fun than the last couple years.
They have to do something to spice
and
up
And the
game.
Senior Bowl. We got to get ready to talk about some NFL draft stuff. The Senior Bowl is coming up. 98 underclassmen have declared for the NFL draft, Ray. So we'll touch on that and look at what Mel Kiper and all these other experts are talking about. But Ray and Tay will give some of our thoughts and opinions about the Senior Bowl, the draft, the Pro Bowl, all that stuff. So we'll talk to you Friday, 5 p.m. Thanks. 5
Great
Eastern.
Show.
So thanks. Yep. Thanks for listening, and thanks for talking sports with friends.
Sports with friends.
Yep.
We're out.
Happy. Enjoy the holiday. Happy Martin Luther King Day. Spread the love, y'all. Spread the love. A baby's being born, same time a man is murdered, the beginning and end.
far as rap go, it's only natural I explain my plateau and also what defines my name.